at you. You're ripping me off, and I didn't deserve it because I didn't do nothing wrong. Your buddy set my pipe on fire. Right? That fuck gets someone in the 40 miles or whatever it is. I never saw the sign. I saw it 55, and I was doing 67. That's all I know. Now just give me the damn thing, and I'll look at the date. If I'm working, I'll pay the fine because I can't afford to take a day off. And if I'm not working, I'll plead not guilty because I know well I'm not guilty. There. Now, are you a state or local? Looks like you're a state trooper. Get back to pick up some more guys and run up the deficit on the working man. Just give me the damn thing. Let me get out of here.
What I need you to do is sign the X so I can explain this to you.
There ain't no explaining. I got picked up for speeding before. You're guilty and you paid the fine and hope your insurance don't go up. And you try not to speed the next time. That's what I've been trying to do for 4 or 5 years, and it's worth damn good. Do I run into you, you
green copies for your record, sir.
I don't... All right.
White copy needs to be mailed in within 20 days.
Okay.
Read the back of this hard copy. This will explain how you can have a trial if you want to. On the back, that will explain it. Attaches an envelope. See? Put a stamp on that, you mail that in.
I
just tell you what to do.
Yeah, I can afford the stamp.
The fine's right here, sir. It's $137.50.
You're crazy! Oh, I get it! You're crazy! My wife took money out of her damn account where she's working to pay my insurance so I wouldn't get picked up by... You're crazy!
If you don't pick this up, sir, I'm going to summon you for littering.
Always like put, you know, your race because you're black into movies. I always thought Frankenstein was a nigger. No, because all the white folks were always chasing Frankenstein. Huh? Got him! Got him! He was always running like a nigger. And he grunted like nigger. And when he catch him, he's just like nigger. He whooped their ass. He started threw motherfuckers all over the place. Say, get him, nigga. He still shit, remember? And then white people were scared of him like they scared of niggas. What was that? What was that? Nigga's fine, is it him? That shit used to fuck me up, I'm sorry. He's trying to catch that nigga, wouldn't he?
Good afternoon, boys and girls. It's Terrible Tommy, and that was our nigger part of the show. Oh, there'll probably be more, so stay tuned. Hey, we're at, well, what is today? God darn. This is, somewhere in June, and it's, Monday. This must be the 26th. I lose all track of time. I don't give a shit about time anymore. Once you get to my age, time doesn't mean much. You just keep spending it. Well, I guess it was on Sunday. I was tuning around on the web, and somehow I got tuned on to this live gathering down in Alabama, I guess it was, and it was something David Duke was putting on about saving the South. You know, the South's going to rise again, right? You know, they had all the usual culprits there, and I listened for about an hour, but I didn't hear anything new. I didn't hear anything about world politics. didn't hear anything about what was going on in Syria. I didn't hear hardly anything. Same old shit. If I'd have walked in 25 years ago, same speech, same crap. We got to get damn Jews. Nobody ever says nigger at these gatherings, because even though they're racist as hell, they can't say nigger. It was pretty interesting. A lot of fat old boy, white boys there, I'll tell you. Boy, the white race keeps getting fatter, then might as well chuck it in. That's it. Big, fat, overweight, obese people can't win a war. I'm not saying that people who are overweight can't win a war, but I'm talking about these 300-pound tubs that are going to go out and whip the Jews and the blacks and everybody else. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, anyhow, Dr. Duke is not looking too good with all that self-medicated plastic surgery he did on himself. But anyhow, I listened to it, and that's about it. I can't say anything there that I thought was really revealing, except we idolize this man. He's a wonderful man. Okay. I'm glad you're on that side of the boat. Don't get on my side of the boat. Tune in 5 years from now, and it'll be the same old speech if they're still alive. Same old stuff, different day. But I noticed one thing, the doctor does never come out and do a frontal attack on the rotten, corrupt capitalistas, the runaway capitalists, and people running around with Trump. He never comes out and really attacks those people. It's always the Jews. You know, like the Jews do everything. They're so totally bad. They do all the bad stuff. And I didn't hear much talk about Negroes, you know. And back when J.B. Stoner and those people were around, we heard nigger all the time. Don't hear that anymore, because they say it's not polite to say nigger. Well, since I disrespect the race, I say nigger, and I don't disrespect certain individual blacks, and I would not call them nigger, but the race, to me, are niggers, and that's the way I feel about it as a northern white boy. Now I'm western white boy again. One thing about saying nigger, you know, a lot of people leave you alone. They don't mess with you. This guy's over the hill. This guy's outside the reservation, man. He's crazy, man. He still calls bad Negroes niggers. We can't do that anymore. No. And we can't call these race-mixed Spanish, which they're not Spanish, and they're not Hispanic either. We can't call them Spics. Yeah. They won't call them mestizo. I don't think the right wing knows what mestizo means. I never hear a right winger. They may do it once in a while, but I never hear them in these get-togethers where they get together and stroke each other. They don't do that. Mestizo? What the hell? What the hell's a mestizo? Do we have any mestizos around here? No, we only got Hispanics, Latinas. Well, they're not Latinas. They're not Hispanics. They're mestizos. Race mixed people from south of the border. Yeah. You ask any Mexican, and they know what that means. They know what mestizo is. We got 40 million mestizos in here. Yeah, but probably at least 40 million, plus their kids. But the right wing call them Hispanics, because the left wing will get mad at them if they don't. Yeah, they do. In reality, the left wing determines very much what the right wing says, because the right wing reacts to everything that left wing does. And so they end up doing the work of the left wing. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that brown guy, man, that guy, he's dark as the ace of spades, but he's a Hispanic, you know. I hope you guys listened to that piece I put out on, or we put out, on Syria over the weekend. If that don't scare the shit out of you, nothing will. I mean, we can be very close to a real explosion over there. I don't mean the kind that's been going on for a long time, but they got the Russians and the Washingtonians all ready to go at each other. And they shot down that plane, that Syrian plane, and the rats in Washington claimed it was self-defense. It's some hot dog, probably. Probably wasn't ordered. Probably one of these hot dog guys that wants to start the Third World War. Well, they keep picking at it. It'll never heal, I'll tell you that. And once it starts, it'll be like the First World War. It started very simply over very simple, small stuff, and ended up killing hundreds of millions of people, and that was without atomic bombs. Yeah. So any day, it could happen. May not happen for 20 years, but it could happen any day. These politicians live in a dream world. They live, I don't know where they're living. They're psychopaths, that's for sure. And they play games with people's lives like you wouldn't believe. There's one senator lady that has put a bill in now to stop the United States military-industrial complex from sending weapons to the Syria, to these so-called militias or whatever you want to call them. You know how far that'll go. That won't go anywhere. Because that's all that has to be done. You want to stop violence and war? Cut off sending all the weapons over there. It's not that hard to do. But wait a minute. My brother-in-law would lose his job in that munitions plant here in Minnesota or Florida or someplace. I don't give a shit. I want to keep working, so it's okay if they send those weapons over there. I don't ask anybody what they do with them. That's not my business. That's not my fault. I got to feed my kids, so I'll do anything I have to do to feed the kids. I'll help them build the most heinous weapons that the world has ever seen and support them using it. You notice how when Trump goes to these areas where there's a lot of military and military factories and munitions factories, they love him, man, because he's going to make America great by stomping on everybody else, I guess. Yeah, I guess he is. Sort of a turnaround to what he ran on, isn't it? I thought he ran on getting along with the Russians and let's have peace and let's not be going all over the world like Obama and these other guys. Let's be cool. That changed real fast, didn't it? That was fast change about. I'm going to run this little print of a black guy giving a speech. I guess he perceives himself to be a poet of sorts. Now, quite a bit of this is true, because hate crimes are based on prejudice. Well, why do we deny that? Oh, the right wing would deny it. Oh, no, we're not prejudiced. I'm prejudiced as hell, as a separatist. I don't go around beating on people who are not white. But I know at every minute that I'm walking around, that I'm looking at people who are not of my race, and we should be separate. I mean, I'm aware of it 24 hours a day. When I go into a store, a grocery store, or hardware store, wherever, where there's all kinds of race mixing, of course I see it right away, and I evaluate the different combinations of people and the men and the women coming together and all that kind of stuff. That's prejudice. But technically it's not, because I don't prejudge anybody. I see what they do, and I watch them in their natural habitat, and that's judging by the evidence. You see the evidence. So it's not prejudice, but he wants to call it prejudice. Well, that's okay, because he's black, because he knows what he's doing. He knows what he's up to. I want the power. I want the power over you, white boy. I don't that bullshit about equality. I don't want equality, white boy. I want superiority over you and power over you, and I'm getting it. I'm getting it in all phases of society. And that's the way it goes, white boy. If you don't like it, join the black race, you know. Get yourself a black woman and go from there. I'm going to play this, and don't break your computer monitor. Don't break your computer monitor. Hold on.
The defining characteristic of a hate crime is not actually hate. It's prejudice. We use the word hate to define it because the prejudice is born of a hateful climate. It's the judgment prior to the punishment. It's the inaction of others despite their astonishment. It's the misinformation that instigates disintegration. See, the violence occurs in the silence at first. Then after a while you can find it in words. The standard abuse in the language that's used to leave our sense of humanness bandaged and bruised. Calls for justice become anguish infused when some politicians start brandishing views that rob human beings of their right to be human. Not their human rights, their right to be human. The defining characteristic of a hate crime is not actually hate. It's prejudice. We use the word hate to define it because the prejudice is born of a hateful climate. But a climate is a collective mood. It's not an individual selective move. And in the face of political ineptitude, we only have one option. Let's improve. Hate is such a strong word for such a weak emotion. A wound can't heal if hatred keeps it open. And not all wounds can be physically revealed, but they do all deserve the ability to heal. So let's stand for the belief in living free. Let me find the courage within me, giving meaning to the first 7 letters of the word responsibility with an E. What's your response? For the future generations, we've got to start providing some guidance, because this will be a time that defines us. Because you can't fight violence with silence.
You can't fight violence with silence. Yeah, I agree. I agree. When the blacks killing white people all over the place, doing all kinds of stuff. You can't fight them with silence, you know. So obviously he's correct that prejudice, or what is perceived as prejudice, which is actually the truth, comes on the scene. Then violence follows in many cases, which is normal. That's normal. That's natural. That's Mother Nature at work. That's evolution. But when you stand aside and let these people get away with this stuff, then you're inhibiting racial evolution. And so be proud to be prejudiced. as long as you know what prejudice really means. You're not prejudging. You've been looking at them a long time. Many times it takes people a long time to come to the conclusion, these people just ain't right, man. There's something wrong with these black people. Yeah. So don't forget that. Don't forget that. They want you to feel wrong. They want you to feel bad because you're normal and they're not.
Unanimously found Jabri Davis Martin guilty of killing Jody Henderson. Good evening, I'm Maureen McFadden. Since his brutal murder, evidence presented in court this week points to the fact that Jody Henderson, an openly gay man, was murdered because of his sexual orientation. State hate crime laws enforce harsher penalties on criminals who target victims because of their race, religion, gender, sexual orientation, or disability. But in Indiana, it's a law that is missing, oftentimes leaving community members feeling vulnerable and unprotected.
But I know a change done come. My son's favorite song.
Pat Forrest rejoices after Jabri Davis Martin learns his fate. Guilty for the murder of her son, Jody Henderson.
I feel good.
A slice of justice served.
We all been waiting for justice for Jody. That's what we all been wanting, and we finally got it.
But only the beginning in a larger battle.
I'm about to fight for this hate crime law because you know what? It should be a law in place for people just in case this ever happened again.
This is a guy who was a war veteran of the war in Afghanistan. He was a young person, and he was evidently attacked and killed because of who he loved.
Only 5 states in the nation do not have hate crime legislation. Arkansas, Georgia, South Carolina, Wyoming, and lastly, Indiana.
That's just the exact opposite of the direction that our community, our society, and our country is moving. And that's why we ought to have a legal framework that reflects that.
The latest attempt to pass a bill targeting hate crimes failed in February.
Our state legislature isn't always on the forward edge of social progress.
The verdict brings a sense of closure to loved ones.
Jody is looking down and he's partying. Jody is partying.
Last year, a study from the Associated Press found that 52% of police departments across the state of Indiana failed to file hate crime reports with the FBI over a 6-year span. Now, it's a jarring statistic for community members because Indiana has the nation's third highest percentage of police departments that didn't file these voluntary reports.
Okay, so if Indiana had this legislation, chances are he would have gotten more prison time.
Likely, yes. Now, he still faces up to life in prison for murder with his sentencing to take place on July 21st.
Okay, thanks a lot, Casey.
Well, don't forget, it's primarily white people pushing this stuff. It's white people, like that mayor. He's white. They're all falling into line. And now, like Dr. Duke would say, that's all the Jews, it's all the Jews, it's just the Jews. These white people can't stop to get in line. They got to get in line. They got to do it. They got to have a hate crime law there in Indiana, where I just came from. And but when a white person is brutally murdered, is savagely murdered in Indiana, or any place where they've got hate crime laws, oh, that's a different story. You're a part of the superior race, so it don't make any difference. You can handle it. Don't cry. Incidentally, that recording had some breaks in it, but it was because of the internet, not because of me. Now, the same TV station that's reporting this ridiculous trial of this homosexual black guy, every night, every day, they have Negro murderers, nigger murderers of not only Negroes but white people. Every night and day, they all those TV stations do back there. A lot of Indianapolis, Fort Wayne, they all have these nigger killers. They don't talk much about that, just like, oh, well, that's just normal. That's a new normal, man. Come on. Just like in England, that's a new normal. The new normal is black guys killing white people, and if you don't like it, kiss my ass. If you were standing on a corner down in a black neighborhood with a bunch of guys, how do you think the conversation would go when a white guy gets it? Well, fuck the white guy, man. This shit, he deserves everything he gets, and I hope they kill them all. Actually, I've come to believe that the hate crime laws are the best thing that's ever happened for our side. Yeah, think about it. This is going to create more hatred than ever. Draw attention to so-called hatred. So they did us a favor, maybe. But you stay out of the way yourself, legally. White man, you're living in an occupied country and haven't figured it out yet. Miami, Florida. Miami Gardens man faces up to 25 years in prison after he was charged Thursday with a hate crime, making violent threats against a local mosque, say federal officials. This is while Trump is bombing the shit out of Islamic people all over the Middle East. That's okay. Kill them by the hundreds, by the thousands. Gerald Wallace, 35, is accused of calling the Islamic Center of Greater Miami on February the 19th and leaving a profanity-laced voicemail in which he threatens to shoot its members, according to a statement from the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Southern District of Florida. But did he? No, he didn't. That's a lot of difference. In the voicemail, Wallace criticized Islam. Yeah, well, I criticize Islam, too. It's a shit religion. Of course, Christianity is not too much better. And Judaism, it's even worse. The Prophet Muhammad and the Quran, and threatened to go to the mosque and stated, "I'm going to kill all y'all," the statement added. Yeah. I don't know whether this guy's black or white. The federal grand jury indicted Wallace. You see that? Now that federal grand jury is full of white people, with very likely a white attorney, U.S. attorney, urging him on. Who's your enemy, boys? Who is your real enemy? Your real enemy is among your race. I think if I had to choose, if I had to commit violence against anybody, I'd probably commit violence against the white people that are causing all this. Don't tell anybody, though. A federal grand jury indicted Wallace Thursday on a hate crime charge of obstructing justice, the free exercise of religious beliefs, even though they're crazy beliefs, nonsensical beliefs. Beliefs that caused all kinds of pain, war, and death, said Benjamin Greenberg, Miami's chief federal prosecutor. Wallace, a security guard, also was indicted on May 25th for the interstate transmission of a threatening communication for making a threat against the mosque. But did he hurt anybody? Did he kill anybody? No. This is these are enhanced hate crime laws that they've passed back in a few years ago. They're adding time onto this. Well, what do you think is going to happen in the prison? Do you think people are going to get along better in the prison because of this? I don't think so. These prisons are going to become really something. And don't think it's going to be just white on, say, black. It's going to be everybody against each other. There's going to be war inside these prisons. The imam of the mosque told WFOR-TV, CBS4 News, that he hopes that Wallace's arrest and hate crimes charge will deter others from threatening Muslims. Well, I agree, you shouldn't threaten anybody. You should not threaten anybody. You should just, if you're going to do it, do it. The time is coming when even talking in your sleep can get you into prison. Believe me, this is the way they're moving fast. They're moving fast on this. And the Republicans are just as much involved in it as the Democrats. Trump is just as much involved in it as Obama. So don't kid yourself. Then you're going to have to, at that point, you're going to have to decide, finally, after all these decades of pissing around, What you gonna do, white boy? What you gonna do when they come for you? You see, we've adopted and imported the very most heinous part of the Soviet apparatus. It was applied a little differently, but in reality it's the same. Whether it was Soviet Union or East Germany or whatever, they had all these kind of laws, and so we've imported them here. And so does that make us Soviets, communists, or what? No, it makes the same people in Russia who pushed them strongly, the Jews, to be the same people who started them here and who printed up this mess and pushed these weak politicians to accept them. They were Jews, Dr. Duke. I agree with that. You know, I keep pulling up these articles, these news articles off the internet, and I'm all screwed up, man, because we got a nigga basketball player by the name of David Duke, and I don't know whether that's his son or not, but he's all over the internet. It's David Duke, the basketball player. I can't get that straight. Better watch out. Those haters are going to get you. Boo. Yeah. You better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. The racists are coming to town. But they won't be with a brass band. No, that part of the struggle is long over. Some people haven't figured that out yet. No, they won't be coming with a brass band. They won't be coming with flags or uniforms or any of that stuff. And they won't even be coming as a bunch. They'll just be coming one by one by one. And what are they going to do? Hell, I don't know. They could do anything or do nothing. But they're coming. Well, the hate crime KGB are at it strong. Now they got an app for that. If you're the victim of a hate crime, if you're non-white or any other kind of weird situation, now there's a mobile app for that. The Council on American Islamic Relations launched a new civil rights app. Didn't take them long. I said this would happen years ago, 20 years ago when they started coming in. I said, pretty soon they'll get in here just like the Jews, and they'll demand all their rights, man, and anybody that touches them or insults them, they'll jump all over you. So here you go. Here you go, boys and girls. Now your neighbor can accuse you of committing a hate crime. And if you don't have some kind of absolute concrete proof you didn't, you're going to go away. Here's an interesting little article by an Indian, the kind that have a dot on their head, you know. Hate crime overreported, overhyped, says this fellow. Hate crime is not a new sort of crime in India. It is a feudal crime which has happened over the ages. Such crimes today shake the conscience of people and disturb them much more than the past, he said. Union Home Secretary, by this guy, I don't know, Ravi Mishrashi, today said hate crime is not new in this country, and that such incidents have been overreported and overhyped, particularly in the electronic media. Quote, hate crime is not a new sort of crime in India. It's a feudal crime which has happened over the ages. Such crimes today shake the conscience of, well, I said that. Maharishi said hate crimes are overreported and overhyped today, and I said that. They have been taking place over the decades, and it's not a different crime, Maharishi said. In the state of states, conclave of India today, group here. A crime is a crime and should be handled with strictness, fairness, and justice must be done, he said. Well, there you got it. The truth wrapped up in two sentences, or one sentence. That's what it is. A crime is a crime. But when the people play with the fire, they get burnt. And they're playing with fire, and they're going to get burnt in this country over hate crime. I think hate, the so-called hate crime crap, is going to lead to even more to civil war. He also said that the entire paradigm, I never could pronounce that word, shift in policing is needed to drastically improve the situation in the country. He stressed that changes in training methodology and structure in police departments should take place, and people should make themselves responsible because the government cannot do anything. You catch that? Only after the fact. Speaking on cybercrime scenario, he said, and new challenges have emerged with the changing pattern of crime. Whoops. Serious concern today is for the safety of digital transactions. Financial crime is rising and it's a challenge. Well, yeah, they always worry more about the money. Security of database is a main challenge, and companies should be prepared and responsible enough to ensure the safety of people's database. Screw the safety of their body. Make the money safe. I like this guy. He tells the truth. Well, let's hear what big business in India says about the USA. The world's a key beneficiary of the strong India-US ties, says Narendra Modi, while giving immense importance to the economic, political, and strategic relationship between the two nations. Modi stressed upon the role of India Incorporated and the expatriate population has in the ties. The expatriate population is the thousands and thousands of Indians who have swarmed onto our shores, taking our jobs and in many cases taking the white women because they don't have enough white women in India or enough women in India. An editorial written by Narendra Modi in the Wall Street Journal gives us a clear picture of the strategies and the aspirations of the Indian Prime Minister has in regard with the nation's relationship with India, U.S. relationship. While giving immense importance to the economic, political, and strategic relationship between the two nations, Modi stressed upon the role of India Incorporated and the expatriate population has in ties. The fifth column, the Indian fifth column. While Indian firms and techies are often criticized for the loss of investments and job opportunities in the U.S., Modi in the piece has subtly said that Indian firms and investment are key for the rejuvenation of U.S. industrial power. Quote, our bilateral trade, which already totals to $115 billion a year, is poised for a multifold increase. Indian companies are adding value to the manufacturing and service sectors in the U.S., with total investments of approximately $15 billion and a presence in more than 35 states, including the Rust Belt. American companies have likewise fueled their global growth by investing more than $20 billion in India, he said. Pointing out to buying spree of India's commercial aviation sector from U.S. aviation giants, Modi hinted at the positive side of the trade relations with the USA, terming India's billion-strong economy as a continent-like. Modi said that the rollout of the goods and services tax on July 1st will, in a single stroke, convert India into a unified continent-sized market of 1.3 billion people. You don't hear Trump talking about this kind of shit too much, do you? While pointing out the expanding scope of the Indo-U.S. relationship, from efforts to find affordable vaccines to joint studies in space research, from establishing norms for cyberspace to providing humanitarian assistance and disaster relief, in the Indo-Pacific region and training peacekeepers in Africa. Modi said, whenever India and the U.S. work together, the world reaps the benefits. I don't think the average U.S. worker does, though. Modi also, while pointing out the growth relationship between the countries in a defensive sector, pointed attention to the rise of common threats to the two countries. Both India and the U.S. have an overriding interest in securing our societies and the world from the forces of, here we go again, terrorism, which is really guerrillaism, radical ideologies. Well, you and I believe in a radical ideology. Don't you believe in a radical ideology? And non-traditional security threats. What does that mean? Are you a non-traditional security threat? I hope I am. He was stressing on the various challenges, from the rise of extremism, which is our friend, to the tensions in the Pacific region. Modi said it is necessary not just for both India and the USA, but the entire world, that the progress made by the nations in bilateral relations is maintained. Yeah. It's pronounced bend over, boys. See, this is part of that globalism that George Bush Sr. said, now we're going to have that. And now I hear that they're even going to change that a little bit. But remember, these people in the capitalist armies don't give a shit about any country unless it's making them money. They certainly don't care about any particular race. So, what do you got here? They don't care about nationality. Don't care about Euro-Americans, as Duke says. They don't care. It's all just greed and money. Greed and money, and follow the money. It's a Frankenstein monster that is enveloping the entire world. Yeah. It's a golem monster that's enveloping the whole world. The golem was the Frankenstein that the Jews built. The golem. So there you got it. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. This is all about money and profits and greed, and let the devil take the hind parts. What can I tell you? You can meet all you want to in these right-wing confabs. You're not going anyplace because you won't accept the thing that both honest left and honest right know. That's the way it is. And I doubt whether it'll ever be stopped. But I know one thing. Anything that's bad for those guys is good for you. The best thing we can do is encourage them to shoot each other, to attack each other, to tear each other to bits, and step back and stay out of their way. Because if we're stupid enough to get involved with this con game, we're going to go down a lot faster than I hope for. I'm going to read an article here. It's going to take me a couple of days. But I think it's important. Israel or America? The ADL and the establishment of Jewry in North America. One of the most formidable pressure groups in North America today is the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. The ADL was founded in 1913 with the objective of fighting anti-Semitism and has offices in both Washington, D.C. and Jerusalem. In Canada, its counterpart is called the League of Human Rights, headed by the psychologist Dr. Karen R. Mock. Established as a sort of Jewish defense league of the B'nai B'rith, The ADL, however, publicly denounces the more terroristic Jewish Defense League, which was founded in 1968 in New York by Rabbi Meir Kahane. And he ended there in New York by being assassinated. Shortly after the assassination of Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, for instance, the ADL issued a report on extremism in the name of religion. The violent record of the Kahane movement and its offshoot, which forms a supplement to its earlier 1994 report called Extremism in the Name of Religion, the violent legacy of Meir Kahane, but in fact, reading the regular news reports of the ADL available on the internet, one wonders what the real reason they could have to opposing the JDL, when the targets of their criticism are mostly the same as those of the JDL. For instance, when Marlon Brando made a remark on April 5, 1996, that Hollywood was run by the Jews and saw to it that the Jew would never be represented as a kike stereotype, whereas they had no qualms about frequently portraying the nigger and the greaseball and the chink and the slant-eyed dangerous Jap, the JDL sent a message on its internet website saying, "You are a disgusting, fat, Jew-hating whore," and ended, "We're going to make the rest of your life a living hell." At the same time, Brando was also attacked in the report by the ADL. Abraham H. Foxman, the national director of the ADL, ended his denunciation of Brando's outspokenness with the sentence, quote, "Mr. Brando owes an apology to the Jewish men and women who work in Hollywood for vilifying them, and to all the Jews for his stereotyping and use of the anti-Semitic epithet." The ADL are thus one with the JDL in their fight against anti-Semites, but differ in methods they would employ against their enemies, the former preferring legal methods and the latter more direct, violent ones. The ADL's report stops short of threats, but relies rather on the psychological force that the Jewry have, especially over the past 50 years, infused into the terms anti-Semitism and stereotyping. Both the JDL report and the ADL one, however, reveal the bluntness of the Jewish hatred of anyone that exposes the exploitative social and economic methods employed by the Jews. Here I go again, talking about the Jews. The Jewish Defense League, we may briefly recall, was founded as a defense militia for the Jews against attacks from blacks who were beginning to revolt against the Jewish exploitation of the underprivileged. Later, it widened its activities to demonstrations and terroristic attacks against the Soviet government, as well as, quite recently, the Arab activists in America. The ideology of the JDL was comprehensively outlined by Kahane in several apologetic works that he wrote in the early 70s. Never Again, A Program for Survival, Los Angeles, California. Time to Go Home, about moving back to Israel. The Story of the Jewish Defense League railed against the decadence of modern Jews' liberal and socialistic preferences. Yeah, the JDL offices, which might as well have been called the national offices, in the valley here in the San Fernando Valley near L.A. Their office was right above the office of the John Birch Society, if that gives you any clue. Kahane insisted that Jewry can be saved from the coming wrath of the European world only through a rediscovery and consolidation of the distinctive identity. All the attempts at assimilation into the mainstream of Western affluent society, you take news, he said, affluent, not poor society, as well as into that of a communistic one, are futile since they dilute the Jewishness of Jews and make them hateful in the long run to both Gentiles and Orthodox Jews alike. You know, in New York City, as of the 70s, I used to get the New York Jewish Press and other New York papers, and it was exposed in there that 250,000 Jews in New York live under the poverty line. Now, I assume there's a lot more of them under the poverty line today, which puts a lie to the fact that these groups care about Jews. The JDL thus professes in general a repudiation of capitalist decadence of the Western liberal countries in favor of the establishment of a holy orthodoxy among the Jews. That's not going to happen. The assimilated Jews who have succeeded economically in New York land must sever their alliance with what Kahane considers to be the Gentile enemy and make every effort to leave the Western nations where they live in the diaspora now and return to Israel. Israel itself must be aggrandized territorially to include all of the biblical lands of Judea, Samaria, Jerusalem and Golan and the Transjordan, even though these lands have for centuries belonged to the Arabs. It's amusing they use the biblical stuff as a weapon. Of course, they always have. Israel must also be a religious state and not a secular democracy, and must regard itself as a chosen state that acts as a model and leader of other nations of the world. And of course, what a load of crap that is. However, it is clear, yeah, but most of the world believes it. That's the problem. The chosen people. Hitler believed they were chosen people too. However, it is clear from a study of the Jewish religious dogmas themselves that Judaism is not a system of universal ethics, but rather a tribal code for the preservation of a people despised and exiled from the beginning of their recorded history, that is, from the time of the settlement of Abraham's tribe in Samaria. Given the animosity between the Jews and their several host peoples, it is not surprising that Judaism, both in its Old Testament and Talmudic forms, is predominantly a quasi-religious glorification of resentment and hatred. Kahane himself half admits to this fact when he remarks that it was in Sinai that the creation of a peculiar and separate Jewish people took place, having a unique and different way of life, that there was an inevitable culture clash between their neighbors and with those conquerors who attempted to impose a different way of life upon them, unquote. A little earlier, he even points out that the rabbis have traced the etymology of the name Sinai to the Hebrew Sinai. Why was the mountain called Sinai? Because from there came forth hatred to the world. The question that immediately arises from the understanding of these peculiar Jewish origins is how a people whose ethnic distinctiveness arose from an animosity can ever claim to act as a Solomonic arbiter of international politics. They arose out of hatred. Well, I got to cut it off because there's breaking news to the Lone Wolf Radio Network, something I've been waiting on for quite a while. You see, all this hate crime stuff and all this stuff is coming back and it's going around and around. So today, a notable American Muslim is filing a big lawsuit against Morris Dees and the Southern Poverty Law Center, the Southern Millionaires Law Center. And I was sitting there with my lady, and I said, you know, it's amazing, if you live long enough and you stand by the river long enough, every one of your enemies comes floating by. And she said, why don't you make a list of all those people? And I said, well, if I can remember all their names, I will. But maybe at long last, Morris Dees is going to be one of them. The question now is, will the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, and mainly B'nai B'rith, that's where all the money is, the big money, will they come to Morris's aid? Will they do that? Or will they say, let's get this competitor out of the way because he's draining off millions of dollars that we could have as good Jews? So I'm going to be watching this case very carefully and very happily, either way it goes. I remember one of the people that floated by on the river committed suicide, worked for the LA Times. Let me see. One died of a heart attack in a gym on an exercise machine in San Diego. One died in a car crash at Camp Pendleton. I'm going to have to go back in my memory and get all these people up to date and make a list. That at least I outlived those bastards. Hopefully I'll outlive that bitch Nancy Pelosi. The French Revolution, and if you've ever read Nesta Webster's great book on the French Revolution, you find in there, what was there, 15 or 20 of the top people involved in the revolution, some notable people, and gradually each one of them got their head chopped off. Not the king and the queen, they got theirs chopped off, but these were the conspirators that conspired against the monarch, and they gradually, one by one, were convicted of the citizens' court, and they had their head chopped off. Always remember that. Always remember that. Your turn will come around, and you won't have to lift a finger to see it happen. That's what's great about it.